Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable to you, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. So we don't really do saints much here in the United Church, but today I'm going to talk about Stephen. We know St. Stephen most through the mention of his feast day in Good King Wenceslas. It was December 26th, the night of the Feast of Stephen, that Wenceslas looked out on the world and saw the snow lying deep, crisp, and even around the countryside. It was frosty cold. The moon and stars shone bright, so you know it's a clear night. And the clear ones are always the coldest. He watches as a poor man in the distance gathers fuel in the bitter cold. "Who is this man?" he asks his page. "Where does he live?" The page says, "Sire, he lives a good league hence, underneath the mountain." Now, a league was originally considered to be the distance a man or a horse could walk in an hour. It's commonly determined to be about 3 miles, which is about 4.8 kilometers. So on a cold and snowy night, it's likely much more than a one-hour walk. And the king decides that he will take food and fuel to the man. He asks his page to gather meat and wine, and together they head off through the cold night. Now, although Stephen only gets mentioned in passing in the song, he is key to the story that takes place on his feast day, the Feast of Stephen. Stephen is the patron saint of the kind of ministry that Wenceslas demonstrated on this night, called the Ministry of Diaconia. And we see the emergence of the diaconate in Acts, which describes the time after the crucifixion and the resurrection. The church was growing, and the disciples were busy spreading the good news in the world. And there is a concern that's raised that the Greek-speaking Jewish widows were being neglected in the daily distribution of food. This was a time when women had no means of supporting themselves outside of their participation in the family unit. So, the 12 apostles, they call together all of the disciples for a meeting and say, "Hey, we hear that there's a concern with the widows, but we can't do everything. We need to continue with the work of spreading the good news. Someone else is going to have to make sure that the widows are fed and that food is shared fairly. We recognize the need for this work. We just can't do it. So, pick 7 people from amongst yourselves, people who are wise and full of spirit, and they can do this valuable work." And the first person that they chose was Stephen. Now, Stephen's and the others were called to ministry as deacons or as diaconal ministers. And diaconal ministers have a long history in the Christian church upholding the work that Jesus did in ministering with the poor and the oppressed and the marginalized in their society. All of those stories that we hear, eating with sinners and tax collectors, healing lepers, engaging with people who are poor and shunned in society, with the same respect given to the wealthy, that is the ministry of diaconia. And although Stephen is known as the first diaconal minister, diaconal ministry really started with Jesus. The Greek verb diaconia, literally to wait on table, would include Jesus' healing of the sick, feeding of the 5,000, and washing his disciples' feet. In those early days, widows, orphans, and migrants, and those with physical disabilities would have all been marginalized, unable to earn income in their social system. Not so different from today. And the work of the early diaconal ministers is not so different from the work that many diaconal ministers do today. Now, there's a reason that I'm talking about this today. So, I am a diaconal minister. I trained in the United Church to the ministry of diaconia. And people often ask me, well, what does that mean? How is that different from a regular or sometimes even a real minister? So first of all, diaconal ministers are regular and real ministers. They just have a slightly different focus than the ministers we're used to seeing up here on Sunday morning. Those are called ordained ministers. And like ordained ministers, diaconal ministers are called by the church into the service of the church. But diaconal ministry is a different call from ordained ministry. As we heard in Paul's letter to the Corinthians, there are a variety of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are varieties of services, but the same Lord. And there are varieties of activity, but it is the same God who activates all of them in everyone. So generally speaking, ordained ministers are ministers such as word, which is preaching, sacrament, such as baptism and communion, and pastoral care, which is the care and well-being of the people. Generally speaking, diaconal ministers are ministers of education, such as engaging children and adults in Christian and spiritual formation, social justice, including both outreach and social change, and pastoral care, the care and well-being of the people. You can think of the ordained minister as having a focus in the life of the congregation. The focus of the diaconal minister is often how the congregation interacts with the rest of the world in light of their faith. A few years ago, I might have said that the ordained minister's flock, or for the most part, the people who walk through the door of the church, and the diaconal minister's flock are, for the most part, the people she comes across throughout the day doing God's mission in the community. I might have said that the ordained minister is radically hospitable by inviting all to share in the communion table. And the diaconal minister is radically hospitable by inviting all to a meal at the hall and sitting with folks sharing soup and sandwiches. The ordained minister shares the word on Sunday morning, reminding people in the congregation about God's vision, translating and contextualizing the parables, inspiring discipleship. And the diaconal minister shares the good news and values of Jesus at the community's interagency meeting and policy table, translating to secular language and contextualizing to current events and inspiring good policy. And of course, here I am in a role that includes word and sacrament as well as outreach and Christian education, so those delineations of function don't really hold. Even in Acts, Stephen was known as a man full of God's grace and power who performed great wonders and signs among the people. Many diaconal ministers are in congregational ministry, and most ministers, ordained ministers, engage in spiritual formation in some manner. So the difference isn't so much functional. Our training does differ, and sometimes our approach to ministry as well. Diaconal ministers often consider themselves to be ministers from the margins and to the margins, both within the church and the community. We particularly uphold Jesus' ministry of justice and healing. Our statement of belief calls on diaconal ministers to be responsible agents of creative transformation, liberation, and reconciliation, justice, and mercy, inviting all into a pilgrimage of dignity and well-being and a ministry of accompaniment. And the primary task of diaconal ministry is mutual empowerment through education, service, and pastoral care that includes working together to maintain relationships that are life-giving and sustaining of community to meet immediate needs, and to work to create a just and loving world. So note that the task of diaconal ministry is not so much education, service, and pastoral care. The task of diaconal ministry is mutual empowerment, which is accomplished through education, service, and pastoral care. What a difference that makes when we think of ministry, any ministry, including our own. as each of us minister in our lives, imagine how powerful it would be to think beyond the specific tasks to the broader purpose. For instance, in the widows in Acts were not only widows and hungry, they were further marginalized by being of Greek background. They were Greek-speaking Jews who had, it seemed, been overlooked in the daily distribution of food. Here we see their immediate needs being overlooked and being looked after with the same care and respect as Hebrew widows. They were upheld as being equal in the community. A first step in bringing people out of marginalization. And it was other people from Greek-speaking community who were commissioned to do this work. By this action, their wisdom and spirit were acknowledged, and they too were brought in from the margins. Stephen was brought in from the margins to serve, and he gained respect as a man full of grace and power, who did great wonder and miraculous signs. However, while we remember Stephen as a saint, it is not so much his identity as the first diaconal minister for which he is most upheld, but his role as the first Christian martyr. Stephen was stoned to death for steadfastly upholding Jesus as the Messiah, a fitting death, perhaps, for a person known as the patron saint of those who minister to the marginalized. And ironically, diaconal ministers have themselves often been marginalized within the church. At times, our roles have become subservient to other ministry roles, and at times, our ecclesiastic roles have been eliminated altogether. In the turn of the 19th century, diaconal ministry was restored in the form of the women's deaconess movement. Does anyone remember deaconesses? No deaconess remembers? Huh. Deaconesses were trained churchwomen who were responsible for many of the church's programs, such as mission work, Sunday school, youth programs like CGIT, summer camp, and outreach to poor families. In the history of the United Church, the deaconesses have done an incredible amount of work, largely unheralded, often unrecognized, and in many cases entirely overlooked, which is perhaps why I see so many shaking heads here. It is the case, in fact, that when deaconesses married, they were required to return their deaconess pin, and the church deleted or just threw away any record of their having been part of the church. This is a history that we are in the process of recovering. Diaconal ministry now is open to both women and men. In the United Church, it is considered to be equal to, although in a different order of ministry from the ordained, and it continues to be largely unknown by most people. You can now say that you know more about diaconal ministry than most people. While diaconal ministry can be a formal ministry in the church, it is really more a way of being in the world. Anyone who turns their faith outward and interacts with the world in a way that creates healing and understanding is ministering in a diaconal way. Good King Wenceslas' actions were diaconal in more ways than one. He demonstrated a ministry of hospitality to a poor man. He puts himself at a fair bit of discomfort and risk to recognize the needs and humanity of a fellow human being. He walks through the darkness and cold toward the mountain. It is a journey for him, a journey of learning and of being in solidarity with people whose needs regularly take them out into the bitter cold. And he doesn't go alone. He takes with him a servant, a guide who is perhaps well familiar with the experience that is being lived by their neighbor. And when they begin the journey, the servant undoubtedly went ahead, breaking both the wind and the snow. But he started to falter. He tells the king that he cannot go on, and Wenceslas traded him places, putting himself in the position of the servant, breaking the snow and wind to ensure they both get to their destination. There is hardly a better illustration of diaconal ministry than moving away from the safety of privilege and venturing out to the margins of the world to share our privilege with others and to try and understand their reality. It is the diaconal way, and it is an invitation to each of us. And may it be so. Amen.